We welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls because we have, we're not going to have a guest today. So actually, if you'd like to call in, you may. But I'm going to go over my February newsletter because I think it's important that you have a background of what's really going on today. Now, it was General Nasser who ruled Egypt from about 1953 to 1971, who said this: "The genius of you Americans is that you never make clear-cut stupid moves, only complicated stupid moves, which make us wonder at the possibility there may be something we're missing." Let me repeat that. The genius of you Americans is you never make clear-cut stupid moves, only complicated stupid moves, which make us wonder at the possibility there's something we're missing. And obviously, General Nasser didn't understand. He was missing what this was all about, because, you see, the people in our State Department appear to be bumbling idiots. The people in our FBI and our CIA appear to be bumbling idiots. Oh, we had no idea there was going to be an attack on 911. Yes, the children in New York were all bringing, many of them in the Pakistan area, were bringing their cameras to school on the morning of September 11, 2001 to take pictures of the building coming down. But, and we knew an attack was coming, but we were sure it was going to be overseas, despite the fact that Israel told us the attack was going to be here. Putin told us the attack was going to be here. The Germans told us the attack was going to be here. The Moroccans and the Jordanians told us the attack was going to be here. Mullah Omar warned us of the Taliban, warned us the attack was going to be on the United States. But our bumbling idiots in Washington, D.C. had no idea what was going to happen. And they want to give you the impression that they're bumbling idiots, but they're not. They're extremely shrewd. In fact, you've got to be very shrewd to appear to be such a bumbling idiot. You see, you have to understand that the main goal of the people who consistently control our State Department and so many of the centers of our government, whether the Democrats or whether the Republicans are in power, the real goal is to carry out the a quest for a new order of the ages. The ancient hope that is meant to be fulfilled. And those are George Bush's words. And if you get his second inaugural speech and read the second to the last paragraph, and you can pull that down off the internet simply by going to whitehouse.gov and get the second inaugural address, you'll find that. When our founders declared a new order of the ages, they were following an ancient quest that is meant to be fulfilled. That's what he said. A lot of verbiage in there, but that's the essence of what it was. So you have to understand that the real purpose of the American foreign policy is designed to confuse the American people and leaders throughout the world who are unaware of the fact that there is a spiritual hierarchy, an occult hierarchy that rules the world. And they have a plan. Their plan is to establish enlightened democracies among the nations of the world. That's their terminology, not mine. You'll find that listed in Mandy P. Hall's book, The Secret Destiny of America, which we do carry. Mandy P. Hall was a Satanist. He was a high-ranking Mason, far above the 33rd degree. And he says over and over again, the purpose of the ancient mystery religions has always been to establish enlightened democracies throughout the world. And that is the purpose of the current State Department and foreign policy of the United States of America. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. This afternoon I thought maybe I would go over my February newsletter. I hope you'll all want to get a copy of this. If you do not subscribe to our newsletter, we'll be glad to send you a free copy if you call us at 1-800-544-8927. Or if you have access to the Internet, it's posted on the Internet, and it will be within the next few days. And that would be my February newsletter. Now, we started out simply by quoting General Nasser, who said this: "The genius of you Americans is that you never make clear-cut stupid moves, only complicated stupid moves, which make us wonder at the possibility that we possibly are missing something. And that's really quite true. So much of what goes on really doesn't make sense unless you understand that it is designed to confuse the American people and leaders throughout the world who do not understand that there really are secret societies that have a secret goal, and they date back really thousands of years. Their goal is to bring enlightened democracies to the nations of the world to establish a new world order and a new world religion. Now, if you go into the background of what's going on today, most Americans saw the catastrophic collapse of the Twin Towers on September 11, 2001, and most Americans believe the United States is engaged in a war on terrorism because the president says it, because the media says it, but are we really involved in a war on terrorism? If the United States is really engaged in a war on terrorism, why did the Bush administration try to transfer control of six major United States ports to a company that was owned by the Emirate of Dubai, a Muslim country that recognized the Taliban and supports the destruction of Israel? Pastor Chuck Baldwin was appalled by the policy decision and wrote this: "If Congress doesn't intervene, the UAE-controlled company will soon take control of the facilities in the ports of New York, New Jersey, New Orleans, Miami, Philadelphia, and Baltimore." To which Senator Tom Coburn of Oklahoma said, "Handing the keys to U.S. strategic ports to a regime that recognized the Taliban is not a sound step in our war against terrorism." And Senator Coburn continued, that noting that the Dubai Ports World Agreement could seriously undermine our national security. Indeed, it could. "Consider the fact that less than 5% of goods received at our nation's ports are even inspected, and we have to ask ourselves if we're really involved in a war on terrorism. Why aren't we checking out every container that comes into the United States?" And we'll talk a little bit more about this in just a moment when we bring other stations on board. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we're simply going over our February newsletter because I think the information is provocative and hopefully will make you begin wondering what's going on. If the United States is really engaged in a war on terrorism, why is our government inspecting less than 5% of the shipping containers that enter our ports? Because by doing that, that gives the terrorists a 95% chance of success if they want to smuggle a nuclear bomb or a weapon of mass destruction in the United States. Why would you want to give the terrorists that much of an advantage? If Osama bin Laden is really a threat to the United States, why didn't the CIA try to capture or kill him before the 9/11 attack? Our government tells us he was involved in the hotel bombing in Aden in 1992, the first World Trade Center bombing in 1993, the Black Hawk Down incident in Somalia in 1994, the terrorist attacks on the U.S. embassies in Africa in 1998, the attack on the USS Cole in the year 2000, and probably was involved in the bombing in Riyadh in 1995 and the Khobar Towers bombing in 1996. Furthermore, Osama bin Laden publicly declared war on the United States in both 1996 and 1998. Richard Clark, who was in charge of counterterrorism under the Clinton administration, claims that President Clinton gave the CIA permission to kill Osama bin Laden on two occasions. So why didn't they ever try to do it? Robert Shurer is a senior analyst for the CIA. He tracked bin Laden for the CIA for many years. He told Congress, and I'm quoting, "His agents provided the U.S. government with about 10 opportunities to capture bin Laden before September 11th, and that all of them were rejected." End of quotation marks. So, and if you want to get the documentation on all of this, we have it. Richard Miniter's book, Losing Bin Laden, documents the fact that on 11 different occasions, the U.S. had an opportunity to capture or kill Osama bin Laden before 9/11, and they consistently refused to do that. Now, why would they do that if they'd killed so many Americans? The Clinton administration and the second administration financed the Taliban regime in Afghanistan during the years that they were providing a sanctuary for Osama bin Laden and his followers. In fact, the United States gave the Taliban $43 million in 2001, and when President Bush addressed the nation on the evening of September 20th, 2001, he stated this: The United States respects the people of Afghanistan. After all, we are currently its largest source of humanitarian aid. Now, this is just 9 days after the, you know, after the 9/11 attack, and the President Bush is saying the United States respects the people of Afghanistan, and we are currently its largest source of humanitarian aid. Why were we providing humanitarian aid and funding to the regime that was giving Osama bin Laden sanctuary? Did you ever stop and ask that question? If Osama bin Laden and his followers are really a threat to the United States, why didn't the CIA let the special forces teams who were in Afghanistan at the time when Osama bin Laden was in the trapped in the hills of Tora Bora Mountains? Why didn't the CIA let the special forces go in and capture him? Instead, they hired several thousand Afghan mercenaries, many of whom supported Osama bin Laden, and you'd never guess what happened. Osama bin Laden and most of his men escaped from Tora Bora. Now, Paul Sperry's book, Crude Politics, and we still carry this book. We think it's an important book. Why? Well, because it was never circulated by the publisher, at least not very much. Paul Sperry told me, at least, that he was told by people who worked for his publisher that they didn't want to circulate the book. And so they didn't try to circulate the book. And they printed 40,000 copies and that they only sold about 10,000. They were not trying to circulate it. Why? Well, I'll tell you why, and I'm quoting here. Special forces commandos who did tours in Afghanistan questioned the strategy. They were unhappy with the decision to use Afghan proxy soldiers to ferret out bin Laden. Instead of sending in U.S. ground troops who were champing at the bit to go in, because, you see, they wanted to see action, but they were held back, and that's the end of quotation. Yes, we didn't want to get Osama bin Laden. We didn't try to get Osama bin Laden. You have to ask yourself, if we're really involved in a war on terrorism, why didn't we try to get Osama bin Laden then, and why aren't we trying to get Osama bin Laden today? You know, the president was hard on the trail of Osama bin Laden in 2001 and early 2002, and the military wanted to wrap this thing up and destroy the terrorist mechanism and Osama bin Laden, and instead President Bush pulled him away from doing what was really necessary to stop this and to destroy the leadership of this radical movement. And instead he attacked Iraq and inflamed the entire Islamic world against the United States. And the atrocities and the stories of torture, both in Afghanistan and in Iraq, by the American military, usually at the behest, of course, of the CIA. The American military are simply doing what they're told to do, but the CIA is doing everything they can to inflame the Muslim world against America. And you'd have to ask yourself why, unless, of course, you've read my pamphlets on what happened on 9/11 and find out that the CIA was instrumental in creating this whole radical Islamic movement, which was really latent up until 1979, when we brought the Ayatollahs to power in Afghanistan, when the CIA brought the Ayatollahs to power and then precipitated the war in Afghanistan, recruited people, Mujahideen, to come from all over the world, and indoctrinated them with this radical form of Islam, even passing out Korans and the USAID, of course, passing out $51 million of Arabic textbooks to be given to the children to indoctrinate them in this radical form of Islam. Now, why would you do anything that stupid unintentionally, unless maybe we really aren't stupid at all? Maybe they know exactly what they're doing. And the question would have to arise, why aren't we trying to capture or kill Osama bin Laden today? Of course, the president said, oh, of course we're trying to kill him, but Congressman Kurt Weldon discovered where Osama bin Laden was living in 2003, arranged to have him killed. But when George Tenet, who was the director of the CIA at that time, discovered what Congressman Weldon was up to, he, of course, immediately ended the program. Paul Williams, and of course you would like to document that, Congressman Tenet, Congressman Weldon has told the story. We have that on a number of occasions, gotten it from Ken Timmerman. You can get the tapes from me on that, Ken Timmerman tells the story of how Congressman Weldon was going to, of course, take in a professional assassin with him when he visited one of the country where Osama bin Laden was living at the time, and the CIA didn't want to do that. When Paul Williams has been a guest on my program, he wrote the book, The Al-Qaeda Connection. Incidentally, if you haven't read it, you need to get it. But he claims the CIA knows exactly where Osama bin Laden is hiding, but refuses to try to capture him. When Tim Berger, who is a reporter for Time Magazine, and this comes from Time Magazine, interviewed Porter Goss, who was the new director of the CIA in June of 2005, Tim Berger asked Porter Goss, the director of the CIA, if he knew where Osama bin Laden was hiding at that time, and Peter Goss replied, "I have an excellent idea where he is. What's the next question?" "I have an excellent idea where he is. What's the next question?" Why? Well, because he didn't want to have to answer the question why he wasn't trying to get Osama bin Laden. We've never tried to get Osama bin Laden. He's the best enemy they can flash up on the screen. Go back and read George Orwell's 1984 and see how they used a fellow named Goldberg, and they put his picture up on the screen because he was the enemy of Big Brother, or whoever the ruler of 1984 was at the time. Now, if the CIA knows where Osama bin Laden was hiding in June 2005, why didn't they try to capture or kill him? And why isn't the CIA trying to capture or kill him today? If the U.S. is really engaged in a war on terrorism, why didn't the Bush administration immediately seal our Mexican border right after 9/11 to prevent Islamic terrorists from entering our country? Paul Williams' book, The Al-Qaeda Connection, states this, and I quote, "Between 2002 and 2004, thousands of so-called special interest aliens, that's SIAs, made their way across the Mexican border and into the United States. They came from countries that posed national security concerns: Saudi Arabia, Syria, Iran, Pakistan, Afghanistan, Egypt, Somalia, Yemen, Jordan and Lebanon, and even Iraq. Since space in detention cells remained at a premium, the newly collared SIAs were simply released from custody as soon as they received their hearing dates from the immigration judges, and almost none of them, it says 95%, failed to appear for the scheduled hearings." Talking to Paul Williams off the air, he said none of them showed up for their detention hearings. Why would they, when they're terrorists who are here to destroy America? And why, if we're really involved in a war on terrorism, would you let people coming from terrorist countries, countries that support terrorism, enter our country illegally and then turn them loose? I mean, there are all sorts of detention camps the government has waiting to put law-abiding citizens in. Why wouldn't they put people who are here coming from terrorist countries in those camps? Oh, my goodness, we just don't have any space for them. We're just going to have to turn them loose. Chris Simcox, who is the co-chairman of the Minuteman organization, told me that he had found Muslim prayer mats and copies of the Quran along the Mexican border. John Quirk, who teaches at a diplomatic school in Paris, and we've had him on a number of times. He has contacts with foreign intelligence agencies and our intelligence agencies here. He claims there are a number of Iranian terrorist cells operating right here in the United States, and our government knows all about them and is doing nothing to stop them. If the U.S. is really engaged in a war on terrorism, why didn't the Bush administration mobilize the National Guard immediately after 9/11 and get them to protect our chemical plants and our nuclear plants? Most of those plants, even today, are inadequately protected, and a successful terrorist attack on a chemical plant adjacent to a large city would kill hundreds of thousands of Americans. So why are we guarding those plants, and why haven't there been any significant terrorist attacks in the United States in over 4 years since September 11th? Have you ever wondered why that is? Is there something that they're not telling us? Why hasn't the Bush administration stockpiled medicines that could save the lives of hundreds of thousands or millions of Americans if there was a terrorist attack, if there was a nuclear attack on the United States? And we'll be back in just a few minutes. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we're simply asking some of those questions that needed to be asked, and nobody's asking them. One of them, of course, if there was a nuclear attack on America, there are certain medicines that would save the lives of millions of Americans. Certainly, if you were directly under the nuclear attack, well, you're going to die. But if you're adjacent to that and you get radiation sickness, you can bleed internally and, of course, can be low slinging, horrible death. But there are very efficient medicine. There is one that's been developed, and the Army is very, very favorable towards it and wants it developed. But, of course, they can't get it developed until the government agrees to buy it. And our government steadfastly refuses to buy the product, which has been tried experimentally and seems to work very, very efficiently. Our government consistently refuses to invest a few hundred million dollars to get this product actually developed. The company that's developed it has spent over $100 million. We could certainly put out a couple of $100 million to buy the product to protect the lives of hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of Americans, because I believe there is going to be a nuclear attack on America. And yet, the Bush administration consistently refuses to stockpile this medicine, which, of course, would save the lives of the Americans. Why is that? I mean, they're putting money out for Tamiflu, but, of course, you have to understand that Tamiflu was developed by a company. And the head of that company until 2001 was a man named Donald Rumsfeld, and he's made a great deal of money on that, a great deal of money on Tamiflu. And, of course, the thing is, all the studies show it really doesn't do any good. Actually, treating the avian flu epidemic, that doesn't matter. Countries throughout the world are pouring billions and billions of dollars into this drug. And Donald Rumsfeld, you notice how he smiles so much of the time? Why would we be putting all this money into Tamiflu when there is no evidence that it will stop the bird flu? And in a few places where there have actually been many cases of this, the doctors have used it, it hasn't worked. So why are we frantically stockpiling Tamiflu for a non-existent threat? Less than 100 people have actually died. And we're not, of course, stockpiling the medicine that would save the lives of people exposed to a nuclear attack. Because there's a very real possibility a nuclear attack is coming. And if you read the book on the Al-Qaeda connection, you will find that the Islamic radicals have been working for many years. And they're waiting till the time is given. People say, well, my goodness, you know, nothing's happened in 4 years. Well, remember, between 1993 and the first attack on the World Trade Center and September of 2001, that's 8 years. They waited 8 years before between the attacks on the World Trade Center. And if you don't think that they're very slow, they realize, of course, when the attack, and they're not going to attack one city. They have actually 7 cities that they've actually laid out, and they're all listed in the Al-Qaeda connection. We do carry the book. The 8 cities that Al-Qaeda intends to attack are here in the United States. So, I mean, I would be much more concerned about the threat of a nuclear attack here in the United States than I would about the Tamiflu. But you see, they focus our attention on that. And, of course, they never focus our attention on the very real dangers that we face here in the United States today. A threat that could lead to the deaths of countless millions of Americans. There's medicine there that could be stockpiled. If we're really involved in a war on terrorism, why is it that the Bush administration steadfastly refuses to stockpile medicines for a very real threat here? Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we were just asking the question why the Bush administration has steadfastly refused to stockpile the medicines that would save the lives of millions of Americans if there were a nuclear attack on the United States, which is far more of a danger than the bird flu mutating, unless, of course, they're intentionally going to mutate it. They have the capacity to create new diseases. If you doubt that, we'll be glad to provide you the information. Certainly from Zygmunt Brzezinski, from Dr. MacArthur. Zygmunt Brzezinski, who formed the Trilateral Commission in his book back in 1970, Between Two Ages, talked about how in the future they're going to be able to create new diseases, create chronic disability, disable the enemy, then you can just take over the country without fighting, and create storms and droughts. Have you noticed the weather's differently? Do you think they have the ability to change the weather? Well, Zygmunt Brzezinski thought by this time we'd certainly be able to. But, of course, Rush Limbaugh is not going to tell you that. And also, of course, if you don't think that they're creating new diseases for mass killing, Why, we'll be glad to send you Dr. MacArthur's testimony in 1969 to the House Appropriations Committee. Give us a call, 1-800-544-8927. Ask for either of those documents. If we're really involved in terrorism, why, many years ago, was our civil defense system disbanded, and why has it never been reinstituted? Back in the 1960s, we had a very effective civil defense system. We had 400 mobile surgical hospitals, and they're all gone now. There is no effective civil defense system. You saw how effective U.S. civil defense was in New Orleans. Where, of course, they had the military down there searching people's homes, disarming the people so they couldn't protect themselves from the looters. Why would you do something that stupid unintentionally? If the U.S. is really involved in a war on terrorism, and there's the possibility of another airline hijacking, why does the Bush administration oppose efforts to arm the airline pilots? Most pilots want to carry weapons. Most airline passengers want the pilots to be armed. Congress has enacted legislation on two separate occasions to force the administration to arm the airline pilots. So what did the administration do? They said, well, everybody's got to take a course before you can carry a gun. And then they put it out in the middle of the desert someplace where nobody could get there, or no compensation for going. And then, of course, when you got the right to carry a gun, you had to keep it locked all the time. You could only take the gun out of the box when the door to the cockpit was locked. If you were going to leave the cockpit and go to the bathroom, then you had to put the gun away. Now, that's the dangerous time when the door is unlocked and open. So why would you put the gun away at that time? And, of course, it makes it totally foolish. So why is the Bush administration doing everything they can to block arming pilots? If there's really a threat of terrorism, why isn't every U.S. flight protected by air marshals? Only 10% of our flights are protected. Why are the marshals required to wear a suit and a white shirt and a tie and sit in first class where the hijackers can readily identify and disarm the air marshals? Why did the Bush administration alter the post-911 regulations and permit passengers with 4-inch blade scissors and 6-inch screwdrivers to board U.S. planes? Why isn't every U.S. passenger plane equipped with a decoy system to protect it from a surface-to-air missile attack? Every Israeli passenger plane is armed with one. Our military planes are armed with them. But, oh, shucks, we just haven't figured out how to make one that will work on passenger planes here in the United States. So like those anti-ballistic missiles, the Russians have thousands of them, and they work fine. We were able to produce one in the 1970s that worked, but we just can't figure out how to make one today that'll work. But we have 6 now, because they will not work. The Russians have about 3,000 intercontinental ballistic missiles. We're unilaterally disarming. We've destroyed our MX missiles. We've dismantled the Peacekeeper. They called it the Peacekeeper missiles that were put in under Reagan. Spent, you know, tens of billions of dollars to build those missiles, and now we've simply dismantled all of them. Why would you do something like that? In the face of the fact that both Russia and China are in full military production for war, and they have had a ballistic missile system that'll bring down incoming missiles, our missiles, but we can't figure out how to make one that works. Sort of like those decoy systems. We just can't get a decoy system that'll work to protect our planes. The Israelis can, but we just don't know how to do it. Maybe we'll get home one of these days. Why does the FAA oppose the racial profiling of airline passengers? It would seem to me logical that, of course, if you were going to look for a Muslim terrorist, you want to profile Muslim passengers. It's not a nice thing, but we're at war. They tell us we're at war on terrorism. But, of course, we couldn't profile airline passengers because that would be discrimination, and we wouldn't want to be accused of that, would we? Well, we'll be back here in just a few minutes to explore so much of what's going on today. The American people don't understand. We're financing Pakistan. We're financing Saudi Arabia and, of course, Egypt, and they're all funding Islamic terrorism. If we're really involved in a war on terrorism, why are we doing that? Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course we're asking some questions, and you know, when we get to back, all of our certainly all of our stations are back with us. Why you want to call in and ask us some questions, we'll be glad to discuss it. If the U.S. is really engaged in a war on terrorism, why is the Bush administration financing Pakistan today the tune of about $630 million a year? Pakistani intelligence organized and financed the Taliban and Al-Qaeda. And you want the documentation for anything I'm saying. It's all included in the February newsletter, which you can pull down off the Internet. Or we'll be glad to send you free of charge if you haven't got things from us previously. Of course, we hope maybe you want to subscribe to the Radio Liberty family, subscribe to the newsletter, or join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. If you subscribe to the newsletter, you get the newsletter. If you join the Radio Liberty family, you get the newsletter, plus our four best tapes or CDs of the month, whichever you prefer. So the Bush administration is financing Pakistan, and yet, of course, they tell us that Osama bin Laden is hiding in Pakistan, so why don't we just go in and get him? We're giving him all that money. Pakistan developed nuclear weapons, and they sold the equipment to Iran and Libya and North Korea and Saudi Arabia. Why haven't they ever punished the fellow who was responsible for all that? His name is Khan, Dr. Khan. In fact, he was recently, pardoned for his crimes against humanity by Musharraf, who is our man in Pakistan. Pakistan has 20,000 madras schools. Now, those are Islamic schools where young Islamic boys are programmed and indoctrinated in the radical form of Islam. If we're really, fighting Islamic terrorism, why are we financing the country that is financing the Islamic schools that are indoctrinating young people in the radical form of Islam? Pakistan has 55 terrorist training camps today. You can go up on the Internet. You can verify it. If you don't, why, give us a call, and we'll be glad to get the material for you. Why is the Bush administration supporting Saudi Arabia? Saudi Arabia financed the Taliban and Al-Qaeda. And that's covered, of course, in a book entitled Dollars for Terror, written by a Swiss, writer, and we used to carry the book. We don't anymore, but we can get you the pages for it. 15 of the 9/11 hijackers came from Saudi Arabia. The Saudi ambassador's wife financed 2 of the 9/11 hijackers. And, of course, we know that Saudi Arabia funds the radical Islamic movement throughout the world today. They fund the radical Islamic mosques here in the United States, the radical Islamic schools. They even fund the clerics who go into our prisons. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we were simply asking the question why the United States is funding both Pakistan and helping and supporting Saudi Arabia today. In fact, we recently did give, I think, $150 million for Middle East development, and part of that money was going to go to Saudi Arabia. And yet both Saudi Arabia and Pakistan are funding the international terrorist movement. Is there anything wrong with this picture? Well, if you're out there in the listening audience, you'd like to give us a call. Our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-88295. And I was pointing out that the Bush administration supports Saudi Arabia, and that Saudi Arabia financed the Taliban and Al-Qaeda. 15 of the 9/11 hijackers were Saudis. The Saudi ambassador's wife financed 2 of the 9/11 hijackers. Saudi Arabia funds radical Islamic mosques and schools in the United States, and Islamic clerics who convert black prisoners in a U.S. prisons to the Wahhabi radical faith. Then prison officials have to give the Muslims special privileges. Saudi Arabia funds Hamas, and they fund the families of suicide bombers in Palestine. Saudi Arabia funds the terrorist movement throughout the world. Saudi citizens have been funding the Iraq insurgency that's been killing American boys. Why did the Bush administration censor the Joint Intelligence Committee report that came out in the year 2003, the wind in the background of Saudi funding of the 911 hijackers? Why did the Bush administration insist on censoring the 911 Commission report that came out in 2004 and removing any reference to the Saudi funding of this whole Islamic terrorist movement if we're really involved in a war on terrorism? Why do we give Egypt $3 billion a year, and yet Egypt, of course, is funding both the PLO and Hamas? If the U.S. is really engaged in a war on terrorism, why are U.S. corporations allowed to establish partnerships with nations that support Islamic terrorism? The Center for Security Policy studied, and I'm quoting here from a book that's written by Frank Gaffney. It's called, I think, War Footing. The Center for Security Policy study showed that the American pension funds examined had approximately $188 billion invested in companies that partner with terrorist sponsoring regimes. Now, why would our government allow our corporations and our pension funds to invest in corporations that partner with countries that are terrorist, you know, nations? That just doesn't make sense. If the U.S. is really involved in a war on terrorism, why did President Bush send Paul Bremer, who incidentally comes from the Council on Foreign Relations, let him go over to Egypt as his personal envoy and disband the Iraqi army, disband the Iraqi police force, disband the Iraqi civil service, destroy the infrastructure of Iraq, and precipitate the civil war we have today? Why would we have done that unintentionally? If we're really involved in a war on terrorism, there weren't any terrorists in Iraq before we went in there and brought them in. They drew them in from elsewhere so they could fight and to kill Americans. Major General Paul Eaton, he's writing a book about his experiences there, and he's called for certainly both Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld to resign. Major General Paul Eaton was ordered to rebuild the Iraqi army a few days after the president had announced we were victorious. Remember when President Bush landed on the carrier there and said, we've won the war in Iraq? That was in 2003. Well, Major General Paul Eaton was ordered to rebuild the Iraqi army that Paul Bremer had destroyed. But the trouble was that the Pentagon did everything they could to block General Eaton's effort to rebuild the Iraqi army. Tom Shanker wrote an article in the New York Times, and I'm going to quote very briefly from this. And I'm quoting here from General Eaton. We set out to man, train, and equip an army for a country of 25 million with 6 men, General Eaton said. He worked into the autumn with a revolving door of individuals, lone talent that would spend between 2 weeks and 2 months, he said, and never received half of the 250 professional staff members he had been promised. Although the Iraqi army had dissolved during the American-led invasion, the decision by Mr. Bremer and the Pentagon not to preserve or recall any of the complete Iraqi units meant the training task was bigger than expected. It also left General Eaton without any Iraqi non-commissioned officers. Training an army without non-commissioned officers to serve as drill sergeants is like pitching a tent without poles, said General Eaton. Ladies and gentlemen, you wonder why, of course, we have to send our boys over there to do the fighting? Because they blocked every effort to rebuild the Iraqi army. They dissolved the old Iraqi army, and they're telling you what a great job we've done in rebuilding it. And, of course, they can't depend upon the Iraqi army at all. Recently, you saw within this last week some sort of an operation over there in Iraq. You probably saw it on television. And you saw the planes there and these Iraqi soldiers getting off the plane and running out into the desert. Nothing around, nothing at all. And that was a military operation. There was nothing there. There was no cities. There were no terrorists at all. They wouldn't dare put them into a situation where they're going to come up against other Iraqis, because these are Iraqis and they don't want to kill other Iraqis, unless, of course, the Shias want to kill the Sunnis and the Sunnis want to kill the Shias. And we've created a civil war over there. Things are far worse off than they were before we went in. They had a tyrant as government and as a dictator. No question he did. But remember, he was the tyrant we kept in power. If you have not read the wonderful book we have by Robert Baer titled See No Evil, he was a CIA operative over there. And if you read Robert Baer, and of course he's quoted in my little pamphlets on 9-1-1, you can get them for us, $4, 9-1-1, all three pamphlets for $9.95. But we quote Paul Baer saying, of Robert Baer saying, is he never met an Iraqi who didn't believe the United States was keeping Saddam Hussein in power. Now, he was there in 1995, cited two specific instances where, you know, the Iraqi military tried to overthrow Saddam Hussein because they hated him. But, of course, the CIA and our government betrayed the Iraqi military officers. They were, of course, captured and tortured to death, and their families were probably killed. Why wouldn't our government have wanted to get rid of Saddam Hussein before we had to attack him in 2001? Or 2000, I guess it was really 2003 before we attacked. Well, I think everything's on a timetable. And I think that we kept Saddam in power. He was a very, very weak opponent. And as the U.S. military has said, General Zinni has said, you can read my January newsletter, General Zinni pointed out, the army was totally disorganized. They were totally under our control. We dominated them. We were bombing on a daily basis for 10 years. That's why we went in there, because they knew there'd be no opposition. And yet look and see the tragedy that's unfolded. If the U.S. is really engaged in a war on terrorism, why is the Bush administration antagonizing Muslims throughout the world and getting them to hate us? You would think we'd try to win them around. You would think that when we had them captives, we'd treat them well and give them a Bible. Instead, we torture them and give them a Quran. And what's wrong with this picture? If they were really involved in a war on terrorism, why is the Bush administration planning on attacking Iran and Syria? Well, let me answer those questions for you. And I think probably one of the best ways to do that would be with a quotation that comes from Michael Adeen, who is one of the primary architects of our Middle East policy. Michael Adeen has written several books on Machiavelli, saying what a great guy Machiavelli was. And writing in the Wall Street Journal on the 30th of October, 2001, and we'll be glad to send you a copy of the page if you need it. Michael Adeen said this: the manhunt for Osama bin Laden and his network must be merely one salvo of a great revolutionary war that will transform the Middle East. The manhunt for Osama bin Laden and his network must be merely one salvo of a great revolutionary war that will transform the Middle East. And ladies and gentlemen, that's what this is all about. We're not fighting terrorism. This is a great revolutionary war to transform the Middle East. And it is really part of that ancient hope that is meant to be fulfilled. It's all about the New World Order and the New World Religion. Well, we hope many of you want to get our February newsletter. It just went out. You'll get it in a day or two. Sorry to be a little late, but we've been away for a week, as you know, so we're just getting back, and the team is just getting things up. Right now, let's go to Jim, calling us from Missouri. Hi, how are you doing?
Good, how are you, Doctor?
I'm doing fine.
Can you tell me, I was just in the process of catching you when you gave that Ladine quote. When did he write that?
October 30th, 2001. It was about a little over 3 or 4 weeks, about 6 or 7 weeks after the 9/11 attack. And the quotation, the manhunt for Osama bin Laden and his network must be merely one salvo of a great revolutionary war that will transform the Middle East.
That's foolish talk.
No, it isn't. This is what it's all about. We're not there for oil. We're not there for money. We're not there to protect Israel. This is a great revolutionary war to bring about the New World Order. These people look at the world differently than you and I do, Jim. That's what you have to understand, because they worship a different God.
Before I get to the topic, can I just tell you that a man called Alex Jones yesterday on the air, and I think the man confused your views with the gentleman that you've been speaking to that lives in Paris and teaches diplomacy students.
All right, fine. Then. So
I just thought if you ever talk to Alex, you might let him know that.
All right, fine.
I think that you might be the other man, not Alex.
All right, fine.
I looked up that building that gentleman you had on a week ago Friday, Jelish, is that his name?
Uh-huh.
The EU Watch. I looked up that building that is built like the Tower of Babel.
Right.
That is amazing.
Right. That's
good. Have you seen that?
Oh, well, I've seen pictures of it. It's actually in Strasbourg, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
Right. And yes, that was Brian Garris. That was he's an English gentleman that we had on. Yeah. The thing is that it is a replica of the incomplete Tower of Babel, and everything is spiritual. The people on the other side understand that.
Well,
the people in America don't. Have you ever seen the poster that they have all over Europe, which shows the incomplete Tower of Babel surrounded by stars, and they're all upside down stars? They're satanic stars.
Well, there's a website from Europe that has that poster, and it has the painting there, and it has the building, and so forth.
Oh, could you give me the website? I'd love to get there myself.
Well, I can send it to you. I don't have it off the top of my head.
All right, fine. Okay. Do you have my email?
Yes, sir.
All right, fine. So please get that for me, Jim, because I've really been wanting to get that, to put that on the cover of one of the talks we're giving.
It is just amazing. And then they have the other, they also have a picture of the other Parliament building that has the woman riding the beast out front.
Right.
I never thought I'd see such a thing.
Well, you see, you understand that they hide these things in plain sight. The people look at them and say, hey, there's a funny looking building. They see the picture of the woman riding the beast. And if they're not acquainted with the Revelation, the last book of the Bible, they don't understand the significance.
Well, and I did a Google search, and I don't know what the denomination is, whether it's euros or dollars or pounds, but on the BBC website, it said that building, the one that looks like the Tower of Babel, cost $400 million. And again, I'm not sure if that's pounds, euros, or dollars. But the thing is, they said that the place, every member's office has a $12,000 shower. And this is for a building where they're not even allowed to stay overnight because of security reasons.
Sure.
And they only meet in that building 1 week a month. Except for August, when that building is not met in at all, and that the chairs are so big that they had to enlarge the door, that they had to make the doors to the offices wider because the doors, the chairs were too so big they wouldn't get through the doors.
Well, I think people, for our listeners out there, they have to understand that this is where the European Parliament meets on a regular basis. This is the governing body of Europe, the new state of Europe, the new country of Europe that they have created. But this is simply the first step. They intend to create a new country in Europe. Then they intend to consolidate the United States and Mexico and Canada, and then, of course, all of Central America, and then, of course, South America into another unit, and then Africa and Asia. And then you have all of these various distinct entities, and then you merge them all into the one world government. They're going right according to plan. They know exactly what they're doing, but they can, certainly President Bush cannot tell the American people that he's intent upon destroying the sovereignty of the United States, and that what's going on over in the Middle East is just a great distraction in many ways to keep us from seeing how we're losing our freedom here at home in the name of course, fighting that wicked Osama bin Laden.
Well, and I looked on Dr. Ian Paisley's website. Have you ever heard of him?
Oh, sure I have. Didn't he pass away here recently?
I don't know.
Ian Paisley was a great patriot, a great Irish patriot, who was in the House of Commons for many years.
I'm sorry. I thought you were going to tell the story when he called the Pope the Antichrist.
No, no.
And someone kicked. He did that in the Parliament. I don't know if he was there or not, but one of the other members started kicking him in the bottom when he did that.
Well, because of the trouble, you know, the whole what people don't understand is the whole Irish Republican Army was largely controlled by the British intelligence. In other words, here was a controlled opposition. The major torturer who was torturing and killing people, the most wicked of all the members of the Irish Republican Army, was actually a British intelligence agency. And I suspect that, you know, when we see what's going on over in the Middle East, and we look and see how the British intelligence created the best enemy money could buy with the IRA. And in fact, the number two man in the Irish Republican Army was an agent provocateur, a British intelligence agent. Now, these are two separate people. And then we see this very skillful blowing up of the Shia mosque there in Iraq. This was done by people who were very, very expert with the use of explosives. I wonder why the Shias would blow up their own mosque, or why the Sunnis would blow up the Shia mosque to, or was this possibly an effort to get the Sunnis fighting the Shias and the Shias fighting the Sunnis? Who would benefit from that? Well, who benefits from the conflict between Great Britain and the Irish Republican Army? They play these games, they have for years. Go ahead.
Well, just I agree. I mean, I guess the sad thing is, from what you when you just said that about the leading intelligence agent being actually a British person, that doesn't surprise me at all after listening to your show.
Well, yeah, I got to get you educated so you can get people educated when I'm not going to be here.
I'll do it, and I'll send you that thing. It'll say that it's from Beth.
I would really like
to. My wife has my email.
All right, fine. I really appreciate that because I want to get that picture and put it on the cover of my talk on the World Revolution.
I'll do it. Would you like those other articles, too, about the...
You go ahead. You send them all to me. We'll look them up. God bless you, Jim, and
yes,
thanks
sir.
Very much for giving us a call.
Yes, sir. You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, fine. We're going to be back here in just a moment. And of course, we'll take one more call before the program's over. My number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you want to challenge anything I say, you can always give us a call. Ask for the documentation. We usually can find it for you. We're being betrayed, ladies and gentlemen, because we're dealing with people who dream a different dream, who worship a different God. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and of course, we've been talking about, are we really involved in a war on terrorism? And of course, I think to begin to put this thing into its correct perspective, I would simply point out that certainly Michael Ledeen and many of the people that he works with and many of the people in the Bush administration have launched a great revolutionary war to transform the Middle East. Why? They want to subjugate that region and they want to confederate the world. President Bush declared his allegiance to that goal, to the transformation of the world. During his second inaugural address, and you can read it in the second to the last paragraph, but very, very few people understood what he said, and this is what he said. When our founders declared a new order of the ages, when soldiers died in wave upon wave for a union based on liberty, when citizens marched in peaceful outrage under the banner Freedom Now, they were acting on an ancient hope that is meant to be fulfilled. History has an ebb and flow of justice, but history also has a visible direction set by liberty and the author of liberty. Now, you have to understand that when adepts of the secret societies, and of course President Bush belongs to a secret society, and his loyalty is there, not to America, just as John Kerry belonged to exactly the same secret society, he was President Bush's opponent. I'm sure they sat around and laughed at how foolish the American people were. But when the adepts of the secret society transmit their ideas, they usually divide them into two parts and separate them with a lot of verbiage so common people like you and I cannot understand. But if you take President Bush's statement from the second to the last paragraph in his second inaugural address, and you can get that on the Internet at whitehouse.gov and just look for the second inaugural address, this is what he said. When our founders declared a new order of the ages, they were acting on an ancient hope that is meant to be fulfilled. History has an ancient ebb and flow of justice, but history also has a visible direction set by liberty and the author of liberty. Now, what is the ancient hope that meant to be fulfilled? It's the new order of the ages, the term Novus Ordo Seclorum, that you'll see depicted on the back of the Great Seal of the United States beneath the unfinished pyramid and later placed on the back of the dollar bill in 1935. The mystery religions and the secret societies they spawned want a world government. The unfinished pyramid represents that quest. If they succeed, the triangle that holds the glorified eye will settle into place on the top of the pyramid. The ancient hope will be fulfilled. And Lucifer, the author of liberty, will rule the world. And that's what it's really all about. Could that really be true? Well, of course, you'll have to get the newsletter and find out the rest of the story. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. For those of you who listen to our program on shortwave, I have to tell you that on the 26th of this month, just a few days from now, our shortwave frequencies will change. The afternoon will remain at 5.860, the afternoon program. But if you are going to be listening at 7.490 on shortwave, effectively March 26th, the afternoon program, first hour goes to 7.520, the second hour, 7.465. The evening program goes to 9.840, the first hour, and 9.820, the second hour. Then starting on the 2nd of April, which really gets confusing, why the afternoon program will remain at 5.86. So the evening program, you can either get it at 7.840 or 7.520. That's 7.520 or 9.840. If you have any questions, exchange a call at 1-800-544-8927, and we'll get those shortwave frequencies for you, and please get them out far and wide. Now, I do want to mention that we're still offering a case of my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. The book ordinarily sells for $12.95. You can get 64 copies of the book for $149.95. That's as cheap as we can, inexpensive we can get them out, but this will help us get the printing done. You can sell the books for $12.95 and sell them for whatever you can get for them. You can give them away. You can lend them out. I've just got a call from a minister today who's going to give them out to other people in his church because he thinks they need to know. It's the best book I know of to give you the overview of what's going on and the fact we're really up against secret societies that worship Lucifer. And when you understand that, everything begins to make sense. Took me 20 years to figure that out. If you listen to my programs, well, you learn right away what it's really all about. There are people who worship Satan. There is another dimension. There really are demonic spirits. So if you'd like to get a case of the books, now remember, you won't get them right away. They still have to be printed, and you won't be billed until we have them in hand. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927 if you'd like to get a case of those books. It's an excellent means of reaching others and getting them educated. And if you want to sell them, all the better. And then, of course, we ask you, of course, to give serious consideration to getting the DVD of Brotherhood of Darkness or the video on the Brotherhood of Darkness. We suggest that you get the DVD by David Bay and Chris Pitto. It's entitled The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, which will take you into the secret societies that were here at the time our Constitution was written. And the dark forces that were competing with the Christians for control of America, today the dark forces are in complete control, and that is why they're trying to take God out of our schools and God and Christ out of our Christmas and the Ten Commandments out of our schools, because there's a conspiracy against God. When you understand that, everything makes sense. You understand the Masons control the United States Supreme Court between 1941 and 1971, in majorities of 5-4 to 8-1. And they were the ones who took God out of our school because they worship a different God, the great architect of the universe, depicted on the back of the dollar bill beneath the inscription, "In God We Trust." But it's a different God. You must understand that. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. Our website, RadioLiberty.com. You can listen to our programs there on the Internet 5 hours a day. You can listen on satellite 9 hours a day. You won't get much accomplished. And then, of course, please tell others about our programs. If you haven't seen my talk on World Revolution, you need to get it. If you'd like to get a free copy of the February newsletter we were referring to today, our number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, we certainly ask you to tell others about our program to try to get them to listen. They may think we're crazy, but that doesn't matter. It may well be that before long they'll be afraid we're not. Pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and our ministers, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so, until tomorrow at the same time, Dr. Stan, goodbye, and may the Lord be with you.